Pickaxe.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I am Matthew Toffolo. This is Billy Garrett-John.
I am.
And we are here to talk about Drew. That's Doctor Who.
What? What was that?
D-R-Who.
Okay, fine.
I did steal that from David Walliams and Mark Gatiss.
Drew! Yeah. Oh, I get it now.
You get it?
See, I
need to get a real fan on it, don't I, really?
I hate about Doctor Who.
Anyway, gosh, Power of the Doctor, eh?
What a insert thing, thoughts here.
Yeah.
Delete as appropriate.
Yeah, we're talking to you from the past.
Very Doctor Who-y.
Yeah, this wasn't meant to happen, but somehow it's happened.
The trailer came out.
Yeah.
Power of the Doctor came out.
Yeah.
It all just got very busy.
Yeah.
And we thought, let's...
Billy came out.
Crack on. I'm going on holiday to celebrate it. Let's just do this here and now, folks.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Bad Wolf and the Parting of the Ways.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to put on record right now is the best regeneration story of the new series.
Yes.
And is the best series finale in the new series.
Yes. Undoubtedly.
This is gush central in this episode. If you ever wanted to hear us gush, this is what this gushing sounds like. Yeah.
I mean, I watched it and it is so tight a script and everything is just pitch perfect.
Everybody is firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
From the cast to the production team to the writing team. It's like Doctor Who hit the peak of its power right from the off.
Yeah.
And because, you know, the golden years of modern Who are like 2007, 8, 9.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of the show's popularity and generally what the general public have thought of the show.
Yes.
But to get it so right for the first regeneration, you know, it's clear decades of thought has gone into how do you do like a modern regen. Well, not decades, obviously, but you know what I mean. Like years and years of thought have gone into how do you get this across to a modern audience? And is it me? Or the further away that we get from this series, the more layers of subtext and meta are starting to come out.
Yeah.
Because is the baddie in this show not television itself? If you eliminate the Daleks from it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Vengeance on Varos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's like using very specific modern references, obviously, which we'll get into. But the big bad is like the Daleks and the Dalek Emperor, but also like consumerist trash.
Yeah.
And I don't use that word literally because I love trash telly, but I make trash telly sometimes. but it's like schlock telly.
Yeah, yeah,
it's like, you know,
shit, Billy, you could have been that woman on, you could have been the controller, or you could have been that woman on The Weakest Link.
That got blasted.
Yeah. He was like, the bullets don't work.
Let's get into it. Let's get into it. So obviously, first and foremost, the most important thing,
right?
UK number one.
I don't know, 2005. I was 13 years old and I didn't listen to music of that ilk.
Did you have a mobile phone that you could get ringtones?
Yes, I did.
Text ringtones.
Yeah. Oh, God, it was in that bastard Frog, was it?
It was Crazy Frog with Axel F, it was.
That was number one.
That was number one when this story went out.
Wow.
Do you want to know the UK box office?
So when did this air?
This was June 2005.
2005. See, I want to say Casino Royale, but I think that came
out... 2006.
Oh, is it? Oh, bugger. 2005.
Summer blockbusters of 2005.
Batman Begins.
You are so close. Batman Begins was actually... I think it was the... Okay, Batman Begins reaches number one the day after
this
Parting of the Ways.
Right.
It was actually...
My two top boys are, you know, Doctor Who and Batman.
And in enters a third, Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, shit, Star Wars was out in 2005.
That was number
one. Oh, my God, yes, of course.
While this finale was going out.
And holy then, shit, wow, God, it was a good year for Matthew.
Well, wow. Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie followed in the number one, so not perfect.
No. You know.
But, yeah, damn, I was thinking, like, this is like all of Matt's Christmases have come at
I
once.
I know, yeah.
Little Matt.
Little Matt.
Like, fueled on this, sugar but, going around and experiencing all of it.
This is when the tide turned. This is when Doctor Who booted Star Wars up the arse and said, sorry, mate, you had your few years. Now yeah. Doctor Who's back.
A few years in the sun.
I can remember, went into Woolworths with Dad in Kingswood. And they had a display of Star Wars stuff.
I think there's going to be a lot of this sort of chat between us.
There's going to be a lot of this.
In this episode.
And they had a big Star Wars display. And I picked up Anakin Skywalker with removable arm, as he was like Darth Vader-y, but he was, you know, he was Sith-y. Mm. Removable arm and stuff. And I was like, oh, I'll get that because I collected the Star Wars figures. And then I never bought a Star Wars figure again.
Until?
For about, I don't know, nearly 15, 16 years.
And you're pretty picky with the ones you pick up now.
I'm very picky. I just get key characters. I'm like, okay. And I'm pretty much done with that. But then it was all Doctor Who because it was stuff like the character options walkie-talkies, mm-hmm. the Dalek Battle Pack. I can remember getting those Dalek Battle Packs.
Me too.
In Forbidden Planet.
Do you know what else came out around this time? I could not believe this. I had to keep double-checking the dates, right? The first issue of Series 1 on DVD,
yeah.
Series 1, Volume 1, came out in May 2005 between Father's Day and The Empty Child.
Really? Wow!
And if this is not the most exceptional piece of marketing I've ever heard of, in the week between Bad Wolf and Parting of the Ways,
right.
Volume 2 came out, which of course had Dalek on it.
Oh!
How, I mean...
Clever.
You kind of think that must be the stars have just aligned and it's just whatever.
Yeah.
But nah, also... With that team involved?
They knew.
Come on.
They knew. They were like, right, people are going to be picking up the DVD and they'll watch the Dalek episode and that will set them up for when they watch
absolutely.
The finale on Saturday.
What was on before Bad Wolf? Have a guess. What could have been on? BBC One, Tea Time, Saturday night?
I mean, I want to say Strictly, but was Strictly on back then?
I don't know if it had started by that point. The Weakest Link.
Da, 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 dum.
And there was a bit of continuity.
I remember, actually, yes, I can remember.
Stick
the
around
being
and
on.
See Anne as a robot in the next episode.
Yeah,
and even
yeah.
the Radio Times that week had a billing saying, Anne's going to be in the episode, the show afterwards.
Yeah.
So.
It was amazing because I watched this with Annie, and Annie being from Brazil, we were watching it and...
Got it on tape delay like 6 years later.
Yeah, we were watching it and I was like, so she knew The Weakest Link.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well... The android, that's Anne...
Robinson.
Robinson. Yeah, I forgot her name. You know, I said she is a real woman and that is her doing
so,
the voice
so
of the robot.
She didn't realise that?
No, she didn't realise that. And then I was like, Trini and Susanna...
I was just about
said,
to say, you had to explain
I
the
said,
concept
they're real
of
people
Trini and
as
Susanna.
Well. And she was like, oh, really? She was like, so the amount of times, because she loves this story, and like, the amount of times she watched it, she didn't realise that these were real people. I said, but the funny thing is, like, no one's ever heard of them since.
It's mad.
So they certainly won't be, unless they have a huge comeback in 1,000 years' time that we're not expecting.
As robots.
As robots, yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe they're just like, we can...
This is a prediction, this story of the future, ultimately. Big Brother and Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Davina McCall in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
The theme tune, the logo.
Yeah, and it was actually them, wasn't it? It was actually was Endemol who...
They designed
the logo for it.
In the credits, it's got, with thanks to Endemol and Channel 4 and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they designed the Big Finish, I was going to say. The Big Brother logo
for that episode.
That space one, which is really cool.
Which is, it's, you know, Big Finish does those really high concept things where you just think, you'd never get away with that. Doing that on telly for Doctor Who. That's such a mindset of what Doctor Who was. Because I mean, Doctor Who can do anything, but this is just one of those things where everybody, oh, let's have a black and white episode. Let's have a musical episode. But we've got an episode where the Doctor ends up in the literal Big Brother house.
Yeah.
With the music, with all the iconography. And it's just sort of sat there as like a, like, I watched it and went, I can't believe how involved this Big Brother thing is.
But like, whenever the music was playing, I was like, shit, they actually had the theme tune.
They really did.
And like, I don't think we, like you said, I don't think we really... Maybe we didn't take much notice of it.
No.
Particularly as children.
Yeah.
I think now as adults, when you think about the legal arson around,
I mean, Russell must have called in a couple of favours from his time doing Queer as Folk and all
sorts. I guess that he had a good good relationship with Channel 4.
Do you think, just to provide a bit of balance, if we're to be a bit beeb about it, do you think that this episode now ages faster as a result?
Do you know
or
what?
Are they just such... cultural touchstones still.
Trillions. Do you know, I remember going to, I said this to Annie, because it was full of anecdotes, watching this. I remember going to the Doctor Who exhibition in Red Dragon Centre. And they had the Trini and Susanna, and I remember touching the hem of the skirt, like the person with leprosy touching Jesus Christ's hem.
You chose to touch.
No, it's just there, and I was like, "Oh, you know, I'm not supposed to touch the things."
It
was like PVC rubber.
I had a friend I went into the Doctor Who experience with in Cardiff, and the guy with the clockwork man with his half his face missing from Deep Breath was lying there in his chair.
Mm.
And she
teabagged him, didn't you?
She kicked his boot and his leg came off. Like on the floor. And I was like, let's leave very quickly.
Oh. Well, at least it was.
It was a very gentle tap. It wasn't like, okay, you're actually vandalizing it. It was just like, what if I. Oh, fuck, it's come off. It was like, oh my God.
I mean, at least it was. Had your friend have done that to like. The Earthshock Cyberman, the only surviving Earthshock Cyberman.
Yeah. Oh, I would have pummeled them to death. There
Yeah. Good.
I love the weapons that Trini and Susanna have as well.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's you don't really see a lot of, especially on the BBC and like kids, family tea time things.
Yes. Yeah.
You very rarely see knives or blades.
Yeah.
But. Like, one of them's got a massive pair of shears.
Mm.
The other one's got hypodermic needle
fists.
Yeah,
that's horrible, isn't it?
It's like that, they're just really going for that cosmetic surgery body horror thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so gruesome, you know. Like, obviously none of it gets used, but it's the inference.
It's so tongue-in-cheek with it as well. Because, like you said, it's garden shears, you know.
Exactly.
I think hadn't it been like scalpels or something, or like... very specific.
Well, like actual medical equipment.
Yeah, yeah, that would have probably been too much. But the fact that it's almost outlandish and cartoonish.
With a giant chainsaw arm.
Yeah, you know. So is that, it's very clever. It's scary.
Mm.
It makes you think, ooh, but it still makes you sort of laugh as well a little bit.
Absolutely. So do you reckon that this story, having talked about all the televisual elements of it, do you reckon it owes more to Vengeance on Varos than people maybe give it credit for, do you think it's more of a commentary of its own?
Until you mentioned it, I hadn't thought of that. But I guess in a way it kind of does, doesn't it?
I guess the only difference is you don't see the people consuming it.
You don't do that, no.
But there's enough conversation about the way that people... I mean, you kind of do, because...
They talk about it a lot,
like,
don't
you just watch people get murdered on telly. Like,
yeah, and that's it. You can't leave the house because, you know... the ozone layers.
And all that, yeah, all exactly. That,
you know, so this exactly. is our lives. We watch this appalling nonsense.
So I guess maybe it doesn't go as far as Vengeance, because you can kind of see people actually watching it with glee and being part of the problem.
Yeah.
Whereas they just kind of acknowledge that everybody watches this sort of stuff and, yeah, that's not great, but whatever.
Yeah, that's life.
Exactly, that's life.
Yeah.
But then I guess, you know, you haven't got a Dalek invasion... and the Doctor's regeneration to get into that 45 minutes.
Exactly.
245 minutes, you know?
Yeah. I think the only thing that this story is missing that Vengeance on Varos has is two elderly men in nappies fighting.
It does.
I think
I always forget that that's in there.
Yeah, I think that could have... Maybe rather than Trini and Susanna, maybe that's where John Barrowman should have ended up.
He deserves
two cannibal nappy-wearing blokes.
Beautiful.
I mean, you know, going back to what you said about, does it feel outdated? No.
Mm.
You know, I think I could show this to my nephews. And I almost wanted to watch it with them. And I thought, no, they haven't watched enough Ninth Doctor stuff yet. They need to, really, I just want them to watch the whole lot.
Yeah.
But,
right, so don't show them the regen before they've got to love him, you know, and then they can have their hearts broken.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't matter, like, showing them Day of the Doctor, because that's sort of, people regenerating in that, like, John Hurt is like, well...
It's difficult to connect dots if you haven't seen
it. Yeah, you know, and we showed them Night of the Doctor as well, and it's like, well, you're never going to get connected to Paul McGann unless I sit you down and
sure.
get you to read all these novels, and you've got the reading age of a bloody 10-year-old. Yeah, so, anyway, but I don't think that it... Because I went into it thinking, oh, this is going to feel so outdated, and I just didn't give a shit. The more I watched it, I thought, you know, I don't give a shit. Annie doesn't even know who any of these people are.
No.
And it is, you know, that side of things went over her head. And I think, you know what, this, it doesn't age it really.
It doesn't. It doesn't at all.
I think it ages it for people who maybe are aware of the references more, but
I guess I guess that's sort of what I'm getting at though.
I don't think that really is an issue. Because we get all the references, but we don't think.
Sure.
Oh,
and they're not intrinsic to the plot.
No.
You know, they're just sort of like window dressing, it's telly, you know what that
yes.
looks like.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
this
yeah.
sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And there'll always be equivalents to Trini and Susanna or...
Exactly.
Know, now it's
yeah.
like Love Island instead
yeah,
of Big Brother. Although
it.
Big Brother is now accepting applications if you want to apply for the new series on ITVX.
What the fuck's that?
It's the new streaming platform that they're creating. I think they're just doing it so they can have the live feeds.
Just keep it running.
On E4, it always used to be.
Put it on Twitch.
Tune in and watch them sleeping at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mental.
Oh, so one of them might do a fart and you might catch it.
Or like Gemma Collins when she thought she saw a ghost and freaked out and ran out of the house.
Beautiful. I can't remember this.
Beautiful television.
I mean, I didn't watch Big Brother.
The Doctor having to, talking about the Earth and this future.
Mm. It's all his fault.
It's his fault.
Yes.
So on top of dragging his friends into this terrible situation,
yeah.
and his nightmarish vision of the future,
mm.
he's actually responsible
yeah.
for creating it. So when Rose gets dusted,
mm.
which is
such a good moment.
So well done.
Eccleston's acting. Oh!
It just, it,
and
it's
Murray's
so good.
Music.
Yeah.
This is like Murray Gold, I think. I love Murray's early stuff.
Yeah.
I think Series 1 Murray's marvellous.
I was just...
I mean, I love some of his later stuff, but this is...
Talking of Murray, I think that the reason that it works, it's probably the same for you,
mm.
but the reason that this, the Series 1 music works so well is because he hasn't got the money to have a full orchestra.
Yes.
So he's using synths and
yeah.
MIDIs, and it's at a time when that sort of stuff, like most scores now, you know, if you see Hans Zimmer sat at a keyboard, he's got a sample of an orchestra that's thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment and plugins and shit. But Murray doesn't have access to any of that stuff.
No.
So he's getting the orchestral elements by using some samples, but he's also having to add the electronic elements to bolster it. And it's like, it sounds like Peter Howell.
Yeah,
Some of it really does sound like Radiophonic
And I don't think
stuff.
I'd really picked up on it as much as I had re-listening to it.
I think the reason is, though, is when you choose to listen to Murray's music from that period in time, you always just go to the soundtrack albums.
Yeah, and that's all been re-recorded.
But it's just been re-recorded by the BBC
orchestra.
Natural Orchestra. They're all naked.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been redone by a huge orchestra. And I can kind of understand from like, if he's, you know, he's a musician and he wants the best fidelity and quality. So when he puts the material out, he wants it re-recorded in the best possible way.
Yeah.
But I can understand why, as a result, we haven't had a true Series 1 soundtrack release.
And I think he said in interviews, like, so much of that stuff now no longer exists.
Mm.
Because, you know, old computers, old files, you know.
That's so disappointing.
It's so sad to think that somewhere there were all these versions of these soundtracks.
I guess that's like Dudley Simpson's original scores being lost. And loads of people have recreated those to within... And, you know, perfect degree. So I'm sure we'll get recreations of stuff. I'm sure. One day. Rose's death, the editing, the direction, everybody's acting, the pacing of it.
Yeah.
You think you know it's going to go wrong, but you think she's going to get away with it. Yeah. The one thing that doesn't quite work for me in that bit is there's obviously a big flash of light when she disappears.
Yeah.
And, you know, with those TV studios, you want it to look like a big void, a big cyclorama.
Yeah,
but when the light goes off, you can see the back wall
Oh, can you?
And
you,
I think you can see where there's like a drain pipe or a pillar where they've kind of put drapes over it to cover up the
fact really?
That it's
there.
You can sort of see the way the shadows react with the flash. That's the only thing for me that kind of
I've never noticed
cheapens
that.
It. Because you see the studio floor and you see, you
right,
know,
I see.
But it's not, it's just a tiny nitpick. But you kind of, when you see the production a little bit like that, you kind of notice.
I mean,
it.
I find that with like watching classic Doctor Who on Blu-ray.
The
amount of times I've seen stuff I'd never noticed before and I'm like, ah, I wish I hadn't seen that.
All
I think
the time.
That probably talks, that's a conversation within itself. Like, you know, should we be remastering this stuff to the nth degree so it looks so picture perfect, or do we need to be watching it in the quality it was supposed to be watched in?
Do you know what?
Clunky VHS.
Where I kind of draw the line, I think anything more than, and I even feel a little bit iffy about this, but anything more than them recorrecting the eye lines when Tom falls from the Pharos project.
Yeah.
Anything more than that, I think, is too much.
Yeah.
Because then you're getting into the idea of remastering, which is fine, because you can have like a cut down version with brand new special effects.
Yeah.
That's cool. But you have to offer it as a separate entity.
100%.
You can't just put out the special edition of Day of the Daleks and go, this is the, because I'm never going to want to watch that version of it.
No.
You know, I like the crap Dalek voices
well, that's
in
it,
the original.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And I think you, I guess, because you get Nick Briggs in to do the voices, everything kind of becomes a bit homogenized.
Yeah.
It's not got the fingerprints on it.
Yeah.
You know? You kind of sand off the personality a little bit doing
that.
But I get what you mean.
Yeah.
You know.
It's like how they did it with Star Wars, isn't it? And they replaced Boba Fett's voice with
Jango
Fett's actor. So now, and obviously,
so it's not Jeremy Bullock. They've got somebody else.
Yeah, they got some other. They got the Tamura Morrison to do it.
Oh and shit! Have they done that? With
they've
all
done
the old
that
films?
On the old films.
Tamura Morrison is now.
Yeah, and it's the worst line readings of anything ever.
I mean, he's
clearly
quite monosyllabic in his delivery anyway.
Yeah, and he's clear. The original guy, because it wasn't Jeremy Bullock who did the voice. It was another actor.
Right.
Who was like, he was an older guy, and he was famous for playing like hard asses in like gangster films.
Yeah.
And he had such a cool voice. And it's like, you fucked it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the same thing, you know. I
Star
don't want
Wars
to be
is
able to, I want to be able to listen to the original as it was made. I don't want.
But as long as there's a big corporation in control of what the version they want you to see.
Well, yeah, that's it, isn't it?
Like the theatrical version of the original Star Wars has never come out on Blu-ray or anything.
No.
Still.
I think they said it will never happen while George is still alive.
That is exactly like the Beatles.
Is it? Yeah.
Because the original Let It Be movie, because it's, I mean, to be honest, the Get Back one that Peter Jackson did kind of is a bit rawer in terms of their arguments and stuff. But the thing has always been the old rule, all four Beatles have to agree.
Right.
And the estates of John and George, obviously not being here now, kind of step in and do that hands up vote. But Ringo has always said, no, I don't want it out, because it's still so raw for him, the experience of that time that that film captures.
Yeah.
So there's never been a release of Let It Be. And so instead we get this amazing 6-7 hour Peter Jackson one.
Yeah.
But it's like, Paul's watched this and gone, oh, you know, I think I come across like a bit of a dick there. You know, if you can cut that out, that'd be great.
Yeah,
it's
like,
we're getting Paul McCartney version of Beatle history.
Right,
you know,
I see.
It's that, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah, you want the warts and all.
Yeah, you want the reality of it.
Exactly.
You want the eye lines not matching up. You want the CSO being a bit wonky. That's the charm of it. You know, that's what telly was like back then. It's a historical document.
Yeah.
Don't know if we got anywhere with that conversation.
No, I don't know.
I think we have a consensus, but I think it's in certain circumstances, it's fine.
Yeah, whatever.
I remember freaking out when I can't remember exactly the way it's structured, but the doctors had this confrontation with the controller.
Christ, we're getting ahead.
Are we?
Well, I feel like we've gone to the end of the story. What's...
Well, it's only part one. We've still got all of bloody Parting of the Ways to talk about. What else do you want to say before we get on towards the latter half?
Well, first of all, going back to the Rose thing.
Yeah.
How did you react to that as a kid when that moment happened?
Because
how old would you have been?
I would have been 9.
God, you would have been Emilio's age. You'd have been my nephew's age.
I was.
God, that is bonkers.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, what?
I was basically the same age that I was when I went on Companion Academy.
Oh yeah, you were a little puppy.
Because they gave me the two-parter as a DVD on my goodie bag when I left.
Oh yeah.
I was like, I've already got it, but thanks. little shit.
Can I have that back?
I think you kind of watch it and you go, I mean, she's obviously going to come back.
Did you?
Point.
I was shocked.
Yeah. I was like, I didn't, I don't
think
I bought
it. I mean, I didn't think she was dead, yeah. But I was like, still the shock value of seeing her get obliterated.
Yeah. I'm sure my mum would actually probably go, no, you were in tears in that. I mean, I certainly was at the end
get
of
Billy's mum on it.
Yeah, so she can tell the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a really well-staged moment, but it happens so early in the episode, you know, you kind of think.
But no, towards the end of the episode, isn't it?
Her getting zapped happens sort of like quarter of the way through, doesn't it? Because you've got the whole rest of the story. They've got to introduce the controller, and there's the stuff with Linda. Oh no, was the stuff with Linda happened before?
Oh yeah,
remember.
Stuff with Linda happens concurrently with things.
I watched this last night, at, like 12 o'clock in the evening. Anyway, carry on.
But you were saying about the controller.
So there's a bit where they're having the doctor has this confrontation, the first kind of chat with the controller when she wakes up. That is such a good scene.
Yeah. Like, she's very creepy.
She is so good. And all like the
exposed holes
in the
tripper,
flesh. Phobia central, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Annie said to me, and I never picked up on this, she said, oh, that's a good little nod to the Daleks. That is the Daleks, isn't it? That she's the controller. I was like, what? Ah. And she said, because there's the battle computer, and then I was like, oh yeah, maybe. And then they bring up the fact that she was plugged in when she was 5 years old, and I was like, oh my god, yeah, that really is it.
I thought she was going to say controller like Day of the Daleks.
No, like the battle computer.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of bit. I mean, when she's talking about her masters, and she starts to get a bit shouty.
Yeah.
And then Murray introduces the little synth strings.
Yeah.
And you go. Well, I'm actually, the first time it happens is when he's looking around the Big Brother house.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of little bits, and you're like, did you know the Daleks were going to be back in this? Was it known?
It was kind of, I mean, it was heavily suggested that they were going to come back.
Okay.
So kind of.
Okay.
So it was one of those things where, oh, you sort of, you don't know for sure, but you're hoping for it to happen, and then when it did happen, it was like,
Is that different to you, to what you thought was going to happen in Army of Ghosts? Did you think the Daleks were going to come out of the orb? Did we know it was Daleks versus Cybermen at that point?
Because
I certainly remember having no clue that
I think
was going to happen.
We did, didn't we? Because they brought the wrong Dalek out, didn't they, for the award ceremony.
See, I was definitely watching Doctor Who at that point.
But you were...
I think I definitely was in the forums, but I wasn't trawling through.
Yeah, you know, and I remember seeing that and was like, oh, okay, so the Daleks are almost certainly coming back then.
Got you, okay. I definitely didn't know that when that happened. And I have a feeling I didn't know that this was happening as well. Because I was also trying to work out when I knew that Chris Eccleston was going to leave and that David Tennant would be appearing at the end of the next one.
Didn't they announce that as soon as Rose aired?
I've got a little bit on that later.
Oh.
So, yeah, I mean, that reveal of the Daleks, though, when you hear the heartbeat, Rose is lying on the floor, and you go, oh, shit, and then they come out. Yeah. And that, I mean...
And there's that good shot, isn't there, with the Daleks reflection in the thing. That's really cool.
That's really cool.
Talking of Daleks and the props, holy shit, the lights on these things are so bright.
I love it, though.
It's insane. I was watching, I was like, you could light a room.
Because they take up half the frame when they're yelling it. But that's like, you know, ultimately... I mean, they're shot so well in this.
Very good.
And I think you need them to fill the frame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When, you know, so the lights probably help that a little bit.
Yeah.
And also it's just sort of the way that telly back then sort of looked.
Yeah.
Everything looks slightly varnished, like Vaseline-y.
Yeah.
So whenever there was a light on, it just sort of flared a little bit.
Yeah.
You see it even with the Dr. Sonic screwdriver, and that's a small little LED or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can see that kind of flares when he switches it on.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the cliffhanger. Unless there's anything else you want to weigh in on before we get
Is there anything... let me see. Patterson Joseph, the almost 11th Doctor.
The almost 11th Doctor, yeah.
He's very good, you know. He's a right bastard.
He is.
He plays it very well.
He is.
Captain Jack's dick remarks, they haven't aged well.
Nope.
Torchwood gets mentioned,
For the first time, yep.
Soundtrack is great. Oh, I love that line. She's been evicted from life. Really good. Great stuff. Talked about the controller. Oh, yes. Linda.
Linda with a Y.
Linda with a Y. The Doctor really... Everything...
Really, really digs her.
I mean, everything goes wrong for the Ninth Doctor because he's copped the planet up because of the long game.
Yeah.
And then he turns around to Linda after he gets out and says, I promise I'll get you out alive. And the poor cow gets zapped.
Obviously. Yeah, I want to say as well, because you brought the long game up, I love how that does all the legwork.
Yes.
So you don't have to worry about explaining where they are. Like, you get straight into it and you just get into
it. And
the
I love that it calls back to an earlier episode. I think
and then
great.
It goes back especially to all the Bad Wolf stuff.
Yeah.
And then they mention we just left Cardiff and then we went to Kyoto and now we're here. It just feels like a proper narrative.
That shot of Billy Piper getting
and then she gets
it's like,
on a little treadmill.
All that stuff's great.
Linda's stuff is
the Doctor's type.
Digs her.
19-year-old blondes.
There you
go. Chavvy 19-year-old blondes.
He really digs Linda with a Y. There's that. It's odd, sort of. You know, obviously we're kind of past the TV movie and we're past the point where we acknowledge the Doctor probably likes and fancies people and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But he really kind of lays it on thick with Linda. He can't stop beaming at her when they're talking about, you know, I could come away with you sort of thing. And he's like, it's not a Doctor. I mean, you could read between the lines and look at the dialogue and think any actor could play it any way they wanted to.
Yeah.
But the fact that he is just like, maybe I will, maybe we'll do that. It's just like, hey.
All right, get a room.
Jesus Christ, mate. Yeah. You know,
his really
palms
is.
Are sweating. He's getting all, you know.
That's not a sonic screwdriver in his pocket.
It's not. It's his massive
northern
wang. She is such a great addition because you need everyone dies in this story apart from the regulars.
Yeah.
Everyone dies. Jack comes back to life, but you know, everybody dies apart from the regs.
It is really quite something.
Oh, I mean, not even the regs die. The Doctor bloody dies at the end. and that cliffhanger for Bad Wolf, it's got to be top three cliffhangers
of all
time.
Oh, it's great, isn't it? It's fantastic.
The way it ramps up. I'm going to save her. And then
the music.
And then the sonic to the screen. And then the fact that there was no Next Time trailer straight away. And it sets that precedent of, right, everyone stick around. Because it does allow you to decompress from, it's definitely a stylistic choice. It allows you to decompress from that massive cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Stop the kids running around the front room screaming and going, the trailer will be on in a second, look. And then you can watch it once the credits have gone up. Masterful. That cliffhanger.
Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely. Chris is just superb, isn't he?
Parting of the ways. I'm going to read you the synopsis that was in Radio Times that week.
Okay.
The Ninth Doctor's final episode is an epic encounter with the Daleks.
That was it. Wow.
Now, David Tennant is billed as the Doctor in the Radio Times, so obviously everybody knew. He was announced as the Doctor on the day Aliens of London went out.
Right.
Which, bizarrely, is the episode that was filmed in the recording block where apparently it all kind of fell apart with Eccles and the producers.
Oh.
So bonkers that it lined up.
How weird.
That the announcement came out on that day. And do you want to know what was on just before this episode of Doctor Who? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
No,
I remember the countdown trailers.
Yeah.
Remember those? They were great.
Doctor Who, The Ultimate Guide.
Oh, really?
As the new series
reaches its conclusion. Oh, and David Tennant was the narration.
Here's a look back at the Doctor and Rose's whirlwind adventures in time and space, including their encounters with aliens, alien enemies, both old and new, featuring behind-the-scenes access and interviews with cast and crew. So not Doctor Who Confidential, but an entirely separate show.
God, it's bonkers, isn't it? Just the amount of content, all these special trailers, special bespoke programmes, just because it was such a huge thing. And to think that...
It wasn't at the time. But you think, like, the fucking balls they had on them to be like, this is going to be massive.
Yeah.
Everybody in the production knows we're getting this right.
Yeah.
And we've got the best team possible to hit the ground running and make this a smash success. The BBC are behind them. They're going like, oh my God, this is going to be so... They must have been looking at the reaction from the public and rubbing their hands.
Yeah, going, I mean, but then even like when you read The Long Game, that fantastic book, you know that there are people within the BBC who are like, oh, fuck me, why, you know, why are they doing... This is going to be a disaster.
But the people that you need the support from they, and that are behind them, they know exactly what they're doing, and they know that they are, you know, they trust Russell and
because
Julie
this could have been the biggest tits up ever, and that could have, and it could have killed Doctor Who forever.
Very
you know,
easily.
If this hadn't worked, we probably would never have Doctor Who back. That'd probably like, right, you know, we tried with
one
Paul
and
McGann.
Done, 2 or 3 years, you know, and then maybe take it off, like but, Primeval.
Yeah,
it would have had the same impact culturally as Primeval.
Don't say that. I've had a few people say in the comments that we should talk about Primeval. I never watched it.
I can't think of anything I'd want to review less than Primeval.
I've never watched it, and I don't intend to.
I do remember some of the CG being quite good, but it was you're definitely watching this going, but you're not Doctor Who, though.
I think that's it. It was ITV's answer to Doctor Who. Mm.
Like Sapphire and Steel was back in the 70s.
Yeah.
The same sort of like, but you can't steal the thunder because you just don't do it as well.
No. Nobody does it better.
The Dalek Emperor.
Yeah. He's good, isn't he?
Not only cool that he's taking on the Dalek Emperor, but an insane Dalek Emperor, which is just like, you know, as the Doctor says, it's even more dangerous.
That makes him deadlier than ever.
It does. And the whole thing about being God,
and
I
so
created
cool.
life. If you're going to destroy everything, Doctor, what does that make you?
Yeah.
What a fucking line of dialogue
it's
that
so
is!
So good.
Oh my word! It's you know.
And just even the stuff like when they have the little confrontation about Bad Wolf, and he's like, "Oh, that's not my design. So this is the word of God." And you're like, "Wow, this is." I remember as a kid being like, "Well, what the fuck is this then? What's going on? What's that?"
Explain, Matt. What is Bad Wolf?
Bad Wolf is a message that Rose has left for herself, so it leads her back to the point where she needs to be. It's a paradox, isn't it?
So she is the Bad Wolf.
She is the Bad Wolf.
And when she embodies the Time Vortex...
Yeah, she throws the words out there so that Rose Normal can get to that point she needs to be in order to do the thing.
I have to say, I think the scattering of the Bad Wolf Corporation letters is a bit on the nose.
That is a bit on the nose.
Because it's like, well, I mean... How do they get out of here? Do they just queue up at the airlock and then they go into the time vortex?
All of a sudden, there's a big letter B flying through space.
The big letter B goes, I'm going to be the graffiti on the big field.
Was there for years, wasn't it? They couldn't scrub it off properly. I remember saying to Annie, I was like, oh, that was there for donkey's years.
Magnifique. And then after the kind of the big confrontation with the Dalek Emperor, you get that bit, again, Chris playing a blinder, where he's got his head against the doors and you can hear them screaming on the other side of the TARDIS and blasting. And you're like, this dude's got trauma from, you know. That, and you never see the Doctor in that kind of a...
No.
A mentally emotional
state. Yeah.
Where you just think, I mean, he's crumbled here.
But he was the perfect casting because nobody does that internal angst and... the weight of everything on his shoulders better than he does.
Yeah.
He was the... You couldn't have cast anyone else for that part.
No.
And he's fantastic.
Yeah.
And every time I watch him as the Doctor, I think, God, why didn't we get another series?
I know.
Because he is just so good.
It would be so interesting to go to an alternative dimension and see Series 2 with Chris in it.
But maybe it's for the best that he didn't have a second series. Maybe a second series might have... undermine something, you know. How would the relationship with the Doctor and her have been after that snog? You know, maybe we would have been getting into
if she remembers it.
If she remembers, that's true. I don't know, but it's he was so good.
I think Doctor Who fans are always going to do what if, you know, XYZ happened. What if it hadn't been cancelled? Whatever. But I think if it worked as well as it did. You know, it's just like that was meant to be.
Yeah.
Whatever happened back behind the scenes,
whatever,
it was meant to be that way.
Yeah.
Because Chris has, unlike I think any Doctor, he's got so much good faith because that 1 year, you know, I don't mean to say this in the way that, you know, one bad episode makes people look at an actor who's played the Doctor and thinks they're any less of them.
Mm.
But he just had just a run of solid gold.
Yeah.
And so that's the way that people will always... And he's so many people's first Doctor.
That's it.
So he'll be held in the highest of reverence
like
so many people.
Even like some of the less than great episodes like Aliens of London or The Long Game, you know, or Boomtown, you know, those episodes are a bit fluffier around the edges that we don't, you know, even they have really, you know, there are strong elements to them.
Mm. When was the last time you watched that Aliens of London two-parter?
Oh, when I did the marathon.
I reckon if you watched it now, especially coming off the back of watching this, I reckon you'd have a brilliant time with it. I reckon it would shoot up in your estimations.
I probably would. And it's one that I've been wanting to watch with the kids because I'm like...
Yeah.
Marchi and Emilio are just going to love farting. Aliens that farting, yeah.
It's perfect for them.
I mean, Marcello's like a little Slovene anyway, so, you know, with his asshole.
Oh my God. and then so we've got all the stuff that the doctor's putting the Delta Wave together.
Yeah.
And Rose is going to come along and, you know, I'm going to help you out with this. And yeah. He goes, great, just hold this down.
Yeah.
And you know, as soon as he, you know, you know he's stringing her along.
Yeah.
You know he's doing it for her benefit. It's just, it's so crushing when you kind of realise he knows he has to send her away.
Again, it's his acting. It just, the facade falls, doesn't it? And the music swells and, oh, just so good. Poor Captain Jack, though, when he's like, oh, you sent her home. You could be like, well, could have sent me home.
I didn't write any notes about Captain Jack in the story.
No. That was the only thing that I thought was like, just shows the favouritism there.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'd show favouritism to Billy Piper, to be fair.
Well, yeah, of course.
And then the hologram scene.
Yeah.
And I think that was the moment when, as a kid, I realised he really is going to change at the end of this. Because the precedent had not been set for what modern Who would do with the regeneration.
No.
He could have gone at the end of Bad Wolf, as far as I knew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so when you see that bit, you're like, okay, well, he is going to go at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be so grave for the Doctor to send her away,
send
the TARDIS away. And then that thing that he does where he says, you know, just let this old box become a thing on a street corner, all that sort. Do you think that's Russell, as the Doctor, sort of going, if this show doesn't work...
Well, yeah, it could
just
be.
Just let this thing let this box gather dust.
I mean, I think there's a lot of that in this series, because I remember when we did the We Are Cult event, and we talked about Dalek, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah.
You can read so much of that because, you know, the Daleks, like, why do we survive? And I don't know. You know, when I watched it, when we did that review, for me it was like, we're these two titans of television that everyone's forgotten about us.
Mm.
But we're still here, you know, having a second go. You know, there's a kind of, I mean, maybe that's just us reading into it.
I don't think so.
I think there's an element of that.
Like, I think there is a massive layer of meta commentary that we probably are only now just sort of starting to appreciate because we're that far away from it.
Exactly.
And the same conversations have come up about, is Doctor Who getting a bit tired?
Exactly.
Is it time to give it a rest?
Yeah.
And it's all that, you know, if you want to, he says something like, if you want to remember me or something, if you want to honour me, just have a good life.
Yeah.
And that is the sort of message of Doctor Who, isn't it? I mean, and then Rose goes on to talk about it was a better life with him.
Yeah.
And that just speaks to the core of Doctor Who. It's all about going out there, exploring new things, new, better ways of thinking about things and looking at things and da-da-da-da. And that whole sequence just, it encapsulates the magic of Doctor Who.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that I put in my notes was Parting of the Ways does such a fantastic job of balancing the sci-fi and that domestic world that I don't think any showrunner since Russell has been able to grapple. I think Chibnall has attempted to do it, but I don't think anyone has quite a grip, manages just to balance it and make it all feel important. Because, you know, I remember watching Revolution, for instance, and thinking, God, I couldn't give a shit about Ryan and his dad.
Resolution.
Or whatever it's called, that one. I mean, prove my point. But then, like with this, you know, you really care about that moment where I got choked up watching it was when Rose says to her mum in the TARDIS, oh, about dad.
Yeah. That's so powerful.
And and like Jackie's reaction, you know, as she barks her down, you know, it's fantastic. They're all so good. It's just, oh, I think that was just the overall thing. I just, that's why I put that thing on Twitter.
Yeah.
I was like, this is just brilliant.
But it, it, it just, everything is, it's pretty much perfect Doctor Who.
It really
is. It's perfect drama.
That's it. That's what I said to Johnny.
And it's got the Doctor Who theme at both ends of the show.
Yeah.
You think, what the, this is just brilliant.
I came downstairs and Annie had said to Jonathan, or Matt said this about Doctor Who, and he was like, what are you talking about? How can you even think about this? Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, but this is the thing. I said, it's not just brilliant Doctor Who. Mm. It's brilliant television. Mm. The fact that it's Doctor Who is almost irrelevant because you could take all that, you could take your Daleks and all that stuff.
But that's what those scenes do.
Exactly.
It strips all of the fantasy elements of it and it gets down to the human component of the
and
show.
And that's what made it so popular is that, you know, if you weren't really in for the Daleks, mm. there was that great heart core, at yeah. the core of it.
The domesticity of Doctor Who, you see it, you know, all through Moffat's era and all through yeah. Chibs' era,
oh,
obviously.
Yeah, they all try to have a sampling of it.
But I think Chris Chibnall is, as you said, he's the closest that's come to recapturing that yeah. dynamic because he obviously writes that kind of dialogue really well. He's yeah. got the same sort of Russell Jean.
Yeah, because Stephen Moffat's is more of a sitcom, like, oh, we've got this couple and they're dysfunctional yeah. and, you know.
It comes back to that same thing of, I don't think, apart from, I mean, maybe Stephen Moffat does, but no one talks like Stephen Moffat's characters talk.
No, that's it. But you know, everyone in Russell's Doctor Who, you know those characters. You know a Jackie. You know someone who knows a bloke who's, oh, he owes me a favour. Yeah, all that stuff.
What favour do you reckon Rodrigo owed to Jackie then?
Oh, I don't know.
Let's not go there. That Pete scene is just, it's yeah. really, really
and,
heartbreaking.
And I think, you know, I think especially since losing my dad, hearing that, you do, yeah, you sort of think, oh, yeah.
You know, those conversations happen.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that it's happening in a time machine.
Yeah.
But like we said, that doesn't matter.
No.
It's just two people having a human conversation.
Yeah.
We told you this would be the gushing episode.
It really is. You know, so far, the only critique has been a curtain in the...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. The drapes. To bring it back to the Doctor Who side of things, you know, when you get those moments where you just think, this show's fucking cool. When the Dalek screams exterminate on the other side of the glass.
That is so good.
And Joe Ahern, I think, who directed this,
yeah.
said it's his favourite shot.
It's amazing.
That he did. And it's, oh my God, it's just so cool.
The Daleks are never as good in this.
Dalek gun effects are never as good after series one.
Yeah.
They never get the X-ray quite right again, you know?
Yeah.
So weird.
Yeah. Yeah, like even for Russell's Doctor Who, this is the peak of the Daleks. They are just, well, they just kill everybody. Mm. They are literally unstoppable.
Mm. And because you've already set up one Dalek will wipe out all of Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And then over time destroy the massed armies of the world.
Yeah.
And then you've got just shy of 500,000, I think they say.
Yeah.
And you go, but you've set this up. It's like, you know, I don't like, you know, pro wrestling allegories. You make your baddie.
You
get your baddie to squash somebody from the start. And then when you put them up against fearsome opposition, you know what they're capable of.
Yeah, yeah.
So the audience are programmed to go, this is serious. There's some serious trouble here.
You cannot imagine a scene in this story where Wilfred Mott's going to come out with a pink gun and blast the Dalek.
It's not that kind of episode.
It ain't going to happen.
No. And it's funny because fundamentally they are the same, literally.
Yeah.
The same Daleks. But I don't know what it is. Do you think that the Daleks after that point, it's kind of difficult to take them seriously? You can only really do the, here are the Daleks. Here's your introduction to the Daleks, general public. You can only do that once every 26, 30 years.
I guess so. And like, you know, I think they're still strong in the next Dalek story in Doomsday and Army of Ghosts. You know, there's a sense that they're...
Yeah,
but
yeah.
it's just nothing... this story
doesn't
just
have the weight to it.
No, though. It doesn't. I mean, that scene when they come in and those people who Jack has told, like, well, you might be all right, but I can't guarantee that.
Yeah.
And you can't guarantee that because they all get slaughtered. That is so, you know, hearing Patterson Joseph going on about, oh, where's my money? And like, oh, and another thing that I love are the little callbacks to old Doctor Who. You've got the thing about the lunar penal colony, mm-hmm. which is obviously a reference to Frontier in yeah. Space, and another little nod to the Daleks.
And their empire
well.
In space. Yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And the idea that, you know, Patterson Joseph's character, Roderick, is that his name?
Yeah.
There aren't any...
Roderick, our new favourite character.
Oh, yeah. He's like, they haven't... so, you know, there aren't any Daleks. Mm. And I love this idea, like, yeah, the human race know what they are because exactly. they've invaded and they've had big wars with them and shit.
In that kind of fairy tale sense.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I love that. And I think you
and I...
That's
like how people talk about the, when, you know, dads... and mums getting their kids around the telly
yeah.
to watch the first Dalek story. They oh. talk about the Daleks in that kind of fably
yeah.
long ago. There yeah. were these things called Daleks.
And I know, like you and I, when we've discussed about projects, like, you know, if we did fiction Doctor yeah. Who, you know, that we've talked about in the past, you know, when we've had series ideas, you know, we've always sort of said, oh, it would be nice to have no Daleks in it mm. or, you know, but you get these
the
whispers,
threat.
You know,
yeah.
you hear about them or these things, but...
The only thing that doesn't quite work for me in this story is the way that they just kind of appear in it. In that they've been sat on top of the Earth cloaked for how long, these
oh, yeah.
massive ships?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, I know that obviously they have been part of Earth's history and guiding
yes.
Satellite 5
yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
All, through all that sort
yeah.
of stuff. I get that. But the way it's just sort of like, oh, they were just hidden.
Yeah.
And here they all are. As yeah. impressive as that shot is,
yeah.
to me, it's still a bit like, but after the Time War, and they're all wiped out, and there's one Dalek left,
yeah.
and it's just, oh, some of those ships must have survived then.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, you think, well, why weren't they making movements sort of like
yeah, yeah.
sooner?
Yeah.
But I get that, obviously, you need to keep the reveal back yeah. and all that sort of stuff. But it's the only thing that kind of made me stop a little bit. But
yeah.
It was a very, very minor thing.
Some symmetry here with Day of the Doctor, obviously not intended because, well, maybe it is from as far as Steven's concerned. The scene where he's going to press the Delta Wave
yeah.
augmenter and he can't do it and he's like, oh, coward, any day. Which is such a lovely moment because, you know, the Doctor's not gonna,
never going to do
he's
it.
He's not going to do it. And then, of course, in Day of the Doctor, you know, you think he's going to do it, but he still can't do it because at his core... That's just not the man that he is.
Yeah.
So it kind of works. It's kind of nice symmetry. I mean, I still don't really necessarily completely agree with undoing the Time War because I think the Time War worked so well.
But, I mean, in the same way that everybody, you yourself, say, Timeless Children's going to be forgotten about at some point anyway.
Yeah.
The way that the canon is so malleable.
Yeah.
It's like, it has its impact at the time.
Exactly.
But then at some point you do kind of just have to move on.
Exactly.
From that. Because if you make it too rigid, you can't do anything
universe. God, can you imagine if Shooty Gutwer came along and carried on about the bloody Time War? You'd be like, oh my God. You know.
Anything could happen.
I mean, anything could happen.
Anything could have already happened.
Yeah.
We don't know. What were Shooty's first lines, everybody? What were David's first lines?
The Time War.
What do you think of the kiss? Does it feel...
Come here.
A bit... You need a doctor.
I think you need a doctor.
Does it feel a bit... unnecessary?
It does feel a bit odd. Like,
It's very melodramatic.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only problem I have with it.
The Ninth Doctor's like, look, I know I'm going to bloody die in a minute.
Yeah, so give us a snog.
Well, I've still got a thing for blonde chaps.
Because I don't know what I'm going to be into next time, but I'm into you. Come here. Come in me box.
I had two possibly on the go. One's gone. One's dead.
I had plans for both of you. when all this was over.
I love that. That jealousy between...
Yeah.
Billy Piper plays it so well.
Beautifully.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, she's such a good actor.
She's so good.
So good.
To think there was a time when she was announced, you know, everyone was like,
what
Billy Piper?
And then she just goes, you're all so wrong.
Yeah.
Look how good I am.
How fabulous an actress am I?
I kind of feel like watching it this time, it kind of comes out of nowhere. From this watch.
Yeah.
I just thought... Could he not have held her hand and it went through his hand or something? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's the finale.
Any other offices?
Fucking hell. Stop. the power of the time vortex leaves him via Goatsy. You know, it's just very melodramatic.
Yeah.
I think in the moment where you're like, go on. You know, the families at home
yeah.
who have no precedent for thinking the Doctor is this asexual creature who's not really interested
He's
in
a sexual machine, I think.
He's, you know, it doesn't make...
Yeah.
It's here nor there for them.
Yeah.
But I guess watching it this time, I thought, yeah, that's a bit... It's a bit over the top, but... Fine.
I think you can go with it. I think you roll with it, and I think especially now when you've got like Matt Smith just like kissing women randomly,
or being sexually assaulted by
exactly. You know, it tames it into comparison.
Yeah,
pales into comparison. One thing that I wanted to bring up was a criticism that has always sort of been around for Russell's finales. Has been this idea of the Deus Ex Machina.
Right.
A few people have always said like, oh well. In The Last of the Time Lords, he just gets all these magical god powers and undoes everything like that, and it never happened, and you know, there's no consequences except for Martha Jones's family, who are madly traumatised. you know, and I guess he's in with like series four, like, oh, Donna gets Time Lord powers and she just needs to go, and then, it's all sorted.
Yeah.
This kind of has an element of that. Rose gets magical powers, comes in, wipes out the Daleks like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, saves everything. And everything's put in the way in the box, nice and tight. And we don't really ever come back to the fallout of Rose having these powers or anything like that.
I see what you mean.
But I still think that this is probably the one that does it the best. It feels like there's been more of a build up to, this was meant to happen. I think because of the Bad Wolf thing.
Exactly.
So well.
And the whole thing with the... looking into the eye of the TARDIS.
Yes, all
that. That had been set up.
Yeah.
I think it's... I would prefer this to the... I don't want to, you know... I am a reformed person, but rather than doing the whole love saves
the day thing,
I far prefer this.
Yeah.
Because it's just more tangible.
Yeah.
Like you say, it's been set up.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Yeah.
There's some action involved and some to-ing and fro-ing and some actual... Yeah, like, even if the Doctor did use the Delta Wave... thing.
Yeah.
And that was what he used, just to bang, everything's gone. It's still sort of the same device.
Yeah.
Plot device. But I guess because it's ethereal golden energy, it feels less like a rigid get out of jail free card.
You know? And I think both her and Chris sell it very well.
She
does a very good performance. I mean, obviously they modulate her voice and stuff to make it sound weird and scary.
Yeah. And she's crying, like her tears are all like white and stuff. Yeah, it's brilliant.
And it looks, there's something kind of uneasy about the whole scene. And obviously Chris is looking at her like, bollocks, you know.
And because
it keeps getting worse. I've already fucked up the planet Earth and now this.
But I love the fact that her thing is... she could do anything.
Yeah.
She wipes the Daleks out, blah, blah, blah. But the thing she actually decides to do is bring somebody back to life.
Yeah. She brought her dad back to life.
Her priority is bringing Jack back. I'm not quite sure if that's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, she could have brought everybody back to life on that station. And, you know, the fact she doesn't, I don't think, is sort of noticeable in the plot.
Yeah.
But it's nice that that is the thing that she does.
Yeah.
Besides saving the day and giving the Doctor a peck, she decides to bring somebody back to life.
Yeah.
Maybe that even ties into the Pete conversation from earlier.
Yeah.
You know, that could be a nice... She could actually save somebody.
I can save somebody,
Which is lovely. I've got a note here. Rose can absorb the power of the time vortex, but the Doctor can't.
Yeah, I did... I was kind of a bit like, well...
Is it because he... This is going to sound really odd.
Yeah.
That he kind of swallows it. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's inhabiting it.
Yeah.
But he actually lets it become part of his cellular... He absorbs it into his cells or whatever.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. Let's do that. That works.
Yeah.
Should we go on to the regeneration?
Yes, talk about the regeneration.
What do you think of the speech?
Oh, perfect.
Because he's not... I don't mean... This is going to sound really rude. He's not Matt Smith doing a speech. And he's not Peter Capaldi doing a speech.
No.
This is the Ninth Doctor doing a speech.
Yeah.
There's no grand farewell of, well, I've had a great couple of years, but that's me done.
This is it.
I wish I could have done things differently, but there you go, you know.
And it's not, I'm soliloquizing
because
I'm soliloquizing. This is, you're the woman I love, and this is all going to change very dramatically for you, and I'm sorry, but, you know, didn't we have a nice, didn't we have a good time?
But then, there's that. And I think you can definitely read into it any way you like, but for me, it's him telling Rose and the kids at home.
And the kids at home, yeah.
You've been so brave getting through this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know,
it's been scary, hasn't it? Yeah.
It's been tense, yeah. But you got through this, well done. And I'm not going to be here anymore.
Yeah.
And things are going to be different, but don't worry, everything will be fine.
Yeah.
And then, bang.
Yeah.
And I don't think it can be understated. For Christopher Eccleston to have been the first guy to do a modern regeneration, everybody does it differently,
yeah,
and there's variations on a theme,
yeah,
but everybody follows that template.
Mm.
I'd love to see the way that it was directed, like if Chris is like, well, if I've got this, if I'm regenerating and my cells are dying, surely I should be like, because all the doctors sort of do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And getting a bit
wary
and like, oh, I'm going to faint, and then bang, and then they go.
Yeah.
But he creates that performance.
Yeah.
And every doctor afterwards goes, well, he can't do any better than that, so
exactly.
I'll just do that.
Yeah, you know, and I think...
And the fact he's not, like, walking around, he's just sat in... He's still in one spot going, it's going to happen, I'm going to go, and it just ramps up that tension.
I mean, just because I found, I do like Matt Smith's one. I think his speech is lovely.
But Amy turns up in it, and you go...
No, I like that.
Who are you? Get out of here.
No, I like that. I do like the Amy Pond thing.
Her wig is atrocious.
But his wig is atrocious.
Yeah, his wig's all right.
Nah, his is wank throughout
the whole... His looks better than hers.
No, they both look shit.
Do you think?
Oh, I think they're terrible. Fair enough. Can't watch Time of the Doctor without looking at Matt Smith going, that's a wig, that's a wig, that's a wig, that's a wig, that's a wig. I like his... Tennant doesn't give a speech, but Tennant... He's doing that for like 15 minutes before he says, I don't want to go, and I don't want to go. And off Capaldi, you know, my...
I didn't go. I'm back.
Yeah, he's back.
Here.
Yeah. Imagine that. Imagine that was David Tennant's first line in The Power of the Doctor. I didn't go.
I didn't go. I mean, his first lines and the last lines of that episode are going to be, what? What? What?
Yeah.
Undoubtedly.
Undoubtedly. Yeah, but then Peter Capaldi's one about, oh God, he goes on. And I love Peter Capaldi.
Never eat pears.
Never eat pears. Shut up!
I do like...
Die!
I do like the bit where he does, I don't know, you hate it. Children will know your name.
Oh, fuck that. And it's just the doctor mansplaining to the first woman doctor.
Yeah,
how to be the doctor.
To do it.
This is how to be the doctor, love.
There's a spare key under the mat if you get lost.
I mean, it is awful, and I hate it. And I dread to think what is going to happen with Jodie Whittaker. I hope to God that hers is far more rooted in normality.
Oh, God. I mean...
Because she said she's got one, and they did it in one take. Like, it's a one... Not, sorry, one take. They did it as... It is a one long shot.
I mean, by now, by the time everybody's watching this...
Oh, yeah, it's already happened.
It's already happened.
Oh, well...
Final predictions? Is it going to be a long speech? Is it going to
Oh, yeah, probably.
What kind of things is she going to hit? What's she going to sort of come across?
I wish I'd have got more episodes across 5 years.
I wish that China deal had happened. I think it will be...
I wish we really had set up that we were going to be lesbians.
I wish this all paid off a bit better, but, you know, I've had a great time. Cheers, everybody. I see a Gallifrey one.
So, yeah.
That'll be her last line.
And then is David Tennant going to get another? He's going to give another speech. Oh, it was so good being the Doctor again. I might do this on Big Finish for 2 years.
He's going to go, new face, plastic surgery. I've done a good job there. All those years of sticking around, David.
Why have I got better hair now than I did 10 years ago?
sure. I mean, there'll definitely be a line of. There'll definitely be a line sort of championing, I was the first woman, and...
I was the first woman, but kind of not, if you count the...
Joanna Lumley.
Not Joanna Lumley. If you count the fugitive doctor, because technically she's the first female doctor, or maybe not, maybe it's one of those little kids. Who the fuck knows anymore? I've sort of become Karen from the Yogscast.
You have, yeah.
Sorry about that, everybody.
Go on. Were you going to say anything about Jodie to come?
No, Jodie to come. Sorry.
I was definitely crying for Chris's regeneration. By the time he says, it means I'm going to change. By that time, as a kid,
yeah.
I was like, I remember being in tears by that line.
Yeah, I remember
by the point
being
that line up. Came along.
Because, and I said to Annie when I was watching, it's like, oh, you know, like, because although he wasn't really my doctor, he kind of was our doctor because we didn't have...
This was my first real acknowledgement of that, I think,
yeah.
Watching this last night. I was like, I mean, I know that my favourite doctors, the first ones I saw are like John and Sylve and... So they're my kind of first.
Yeah.
But when you get down to it and you actually kind of acknowledge, well, no, Chris was my first doctor.
In the linear sense. Yes.
And then
I mean,
you
for
watch
me, it would
it.
Have been Paul. But,
yeah.
You know, and I kind of, that's why I think I've taken to Paul more now. It's like this lovely nostalgia of thinking, God, wouldn't it have been great to have been 6 years old and watching this on a Saturday tea time?
Yeah, exactly. But, watching it, I got so swept up in it.
I did. Me too.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I can't deny that this is excellent.
Yeah.
And it is, technically speaking, my doctor.
Yeah.
And it's his final story.
Yeah. And I think for me, contrary to what Jonathan might think, this does feel almost in, sort of like classic Doctor Who for me in a way, because I was a kid, you know, or I was 12.
This is our classic Who now.
Yeah, no, what was year was this?
2005.
How old would I have been?
You would have been...
Had I just turned 12, not 13? I did turn 13.
I was going to say 13, probably, yeah.
And it was before, you know, I became a jaded teenager, which happened very quickly.
But I was just about to say, because whenever we talk about Doctor Who 2005 onwards, generally there's always been between you and me a bit of a, you know.
But this is the thing. I went to watch this on Friday night, and I was like, oh, I really don't want to watch this. I don't want to watch Doctor Who. And Annie was like, oh, come on, you know, you'll enjoy it. I was like, well, she said, well, we don't have to watch this. I was like, no, I got to watch it because we've got to film on Monday. Come on, let's put it on. Oh, and within seconds, I was just swooped up in it. And I was like, holy shit, I enjoyed that so much.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's the power of Doctor Who. It can make you not want to watch it. Yeah. Fuck me, it's so good.
It's made me go back and think, I'm just going to pick random episodes now and just go, have a bit of that, have a bit of this. I think my like most, you know, kids growing up, from the age of, you know, if Doctor Who catches you about 6 years old or whatever it is, you've probably got a good 5 or 6 years of diehard, I am a Doctor Who fan and nothing else in you, before generally people start to peel away and not watch the program as much and grow up and do different things. And I think, you know, obviously I had Doctor Who imprinted on me before that. So I was immune from it.
Yeah.
But when I think about, you know, how long people generally tend to be diehard Whovians for as a kid, and you get to Matt Smith's first season, really, series 1 to 5 is kind of it.
Yeah.
And I think that my general kind of about modern Who, which I've had.
Yeah.
Is me tainting series 6 onwards, reflecting that back on everything else,
right?
Without realizing that I have got a nostalgia
for
this, like people have nostalgia for Tom.
Exactly.
And
the
Weetabix cutouts.
Yeah, yeah.
And Longleat.
I mean, this is it. I think series 2 isn't as strong as 1, but there's some great stuff in there. And series 3, I absolutely love, is probably my second favorite series of the new series. 4, I think for me, was when I was, the teenage fatigue started to set in.
I would agree. I would agree.
And then 5, I was like, oh, this is good because it's all new.
Mm.
And then 6, it was just right off. But like you were saying, you know, we shot that thing the other day with the Battles in Time cards. And the nostalgia we had opening those packets and being like, you know, I can remember getting them when mum came back from shopping. And who have I got? Fuck me, I got bloody that guy from Gridlock. Tory man in a bowler hat.
Businessman.
You know, but yeah, it's that.
I think this has been a bit of a watershed for me watching this.
Yeah, I'm just like, I know what you mean.
I've been putting it on Twitter. I've been watching a lot of adverts from around that time as well. And I, so I've sort of feel like I've watched a week's worth of
television
era and the lead up to it. And so I've been sort of embracing that period of time a lot over the last couple of weeks. And so to watch this and to know Doctor Who Confidential played a massive part in me becoming interested in film and television and getting a job in the industry and it's a seminal period of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I think I'm now acknowledging
how
important
much so.
That is
yes.
for me and
oh,
how
yeah.
much it means to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was sort of thinking, and I think it all the time, really. I think especially when Russell was announced as coming back, you know, this idea that if it wasn't for him, you know, this wouldn't be happening.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, we would not be here talking in this setting. You know, I wouldn't have the job that I have now either if it wasn't for Russell bringing it back, getting me so interested in it, in Doctor Who and making things and learning to edit and this, that and the other. And, you know, I wouldn't have created a YouTube channel, you know.
Done all your action figure adventures.
Yeah, our paths wouldn't
have
crossed.
Yeah, you would have been the person that the boys across the road told me has a TARDIS in his garden. And I never would have believed them. I never would have known that you existed.
Yeah, I exist.
yeah, you're right. It's just, it's a cultural keystone, isn't
it? It's mad, you know. And I've often sort of thought like, oh God, I'd love to meet Russell and say, you know, thank you. If it wasn't for you.
I think those are probably the first words I'd say to him myself.
Thank you. You know, you've shaped our lives.
Yeah.
Really.
At least this like first quarter of it or whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's
like
it's
hugely
mad.
Important.
Yeah.
Let's talk about David Tennant.
Oh,
what do you make of his first appearances on screen? He looks so young.
He does. He looks like a little boy.
His face shape has changed so much.
Yeah.
He's got that, which he never kind of gets again. He's got a totally clean shaven face.
Yeah.
And he always has a little bit of something coming through. But he's totally clean shaven in this. It looks so strange.
It is. It's really weird.
It doesn't look like David Tennant.
No.
It looks like a screen test.
He's so young. And like, can you remember the first costume images that came out?
What, of him in his...
in his pinstripe suit?
No, no. Oh, What was it?
Well, he looks really young. He's got the parted hair of Series 2, which obviously doesn't last beyond Series 2. And then he had like a white shirt on with his pinstripe jacket, which he never wears.
No.
He has the blue shirt, doesn't he? I think they must have looked at him like, well, no, white doesn't work with that suit.
I don't remember that photograph.
Can you not? He's like, there's the TARDIS behind him on the Powell Estate and Billy Piper's
They're in the playground. I do remember that.
Yeah,
of
and
course.
It's like, oh, he looks so weird. Comparatively now.
But I looked at him and went, oh, that's what Doctor Who wears, though.
Yeah.
Compared to Chris, I've never.
Yeah.
Never
but I mean, even
got
then,
Chris's
it's,
outfit.
No, and I said this. I still say this now that it's. I mean, it makes sense for the time, but it doesn't feel like a Doctor's
Not
costume.
Particularly. It's like the Doctor's costume. If they went, okay, realistically, if he's going to blend into scenarios, he needs to wear something like this.
Yes.
Not a clown costume.
No.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But I think there just needed there to
be
a little flourish in
there.
Yeah,
of course. It was funny, actually. We played Doctor Who Trivial Pursuit the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Emilio got it for his birthday. And one of the questions was, and it was the updated version for questions about the 12th Doctor and the 13th Doctor.
So we should play that.
Yeah, we should. It was really good. Mm. It was really good. Everyone hated me because I just
You were playing it with your mum?
No, I was playing it with Johnny, the kids, and Annie.
Actually,
no, mum didn't bother.
It doesn't
like,
matter who's around that table. There's only like two winners, really.
Yeah.
Well, one winner.
And one of the questions Annie got was, oh, which Doctor wore a leather jacket? And she said, well, the 9th Doctor. And she said, well, and the War Doctor... And the 8th Doctor, if you want to get technical.
What answer did they take?
It was the 9th Doctor.
Well, bin that off. We're not playing that game. It's
no.
wrong.
I mean, like, Tennant's costume is... Or we're dipping our toe into the weird and wacky world of Doctor Who's mad outfits.
Yeah,
But it's still quite safe.
Yeah, definitely. And then when the blue one comes along...
Yeah, that's
a bit more...
And yeah. then, obviously, when Matt Smith... Because I think Stephen was the same, wasn't he? He was quite reticent about, you know, Matt Smith being like, can I wear a bow tie? No, don't be stupid. Mm. No, can I wear this tweed jacket with elbow pads? But no, don't be stupid.
You see some of the stuff they were going to put him in from the screen test. Yeah, just... None of it works.
No, he looks mad.
That first costume is exceptional.
Yeah.
Both the burgundy and the blue variants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it all goes downhill... Series 6.
Yeah, because they like clean his hair up and it's too polished.
And then they just give him like a plain white shirt or a less textured white shirt and a different bow tie and a less well-fitted tweed jacket. It's a bit oversized. It looks like one that you just be
The pattern's different. It's got like a tartan pattern, well, like that one.
Yeah,
You know, and it's just not quite right.
And then you get to 7B and you go, that's what you should have been wearing the whole time.
I mean, I love the Series 5 outfit. But I think that's really good.
I think the fact that that is so good that you'd go, I take that over that. And I really like Series 5's outfit.
Yeah.
Anyway, parting of the ways.
Yeah, what are we talking about? Anyway, we get on to this.
We're talking about Doctor Who costumes. So David Tennant, his first lines... Oh.
New teeth.
That's weird.
And that another precedent set. That sets the precedent then for every regeneration.
Yeah,
afterwards.
Yeah. Acknowledge.
A body part.
A body part, yeah.
11th Doctor. Oh, am I a girl? No, I'm not. Probably couldn't get away with that these days.
No. Ginger.
I'm not ginger, all that stuff. Or kidneys. I've got new kidneys.
Yeah.
I don't think Jodie doesn't mention anything.
No, she just goes brilliant.
She does, doesn't she?
Because, I mean... The change is quite obvious.
Yes. Funny.
Funny. I
got those etheric beam locators.
The one thing I do have about David, and I'll get over it at some point, and I'm sure next year is going to be the moment I get over it. But it's the Barcelona thing. I'm just like the gurning and the grinning. Is too much.
It's that insert that clip of Barney from The Simpsons when he drinks the beer for the first time after he's It begins.
It's exactly that. And the 10th Doctor, I don't know how else to say it, but he's my least favourite.
Yeah, and as a boy when I watched that, I saw that moment. I was like, oh, he's going to be good fun.
Yeah.
And then I think it wore me down. Well, as a cynical child.
Of course. But, you know, when I was watching it, he was my favourite Doctor, you know? Yeah, like, really, you know, when I think about it, you know,
I loved him in Series 2.
If I needed a suit for a wedding or to go somewhere...
It had to be pinstriped.
It was pinstriped, and I had a blue tie, and it was slightly undone, and I did my hair like that, and I probably talked a bit like David Tennant as well at the time. But
did you wear sand shoes?
I did. I had a pair of Converse. I had a pair of blue Converse and a pair of red Converse and a pair... Not all at the same time. And I had the cream ones.
Yeah, my mum had a brown long coat that was quite similar to David Tennant. So I would put that on to be David Tennant. When the Sonic Screwdriver toy came out, you know.
On non-school uniform days, I'd go in my pinstripe suit.
Did you?
Which was oddly the same sort of level of... like dress code that the school had anyway. So everybody else is coming in their, you know, nice
jeans.
And their gear that they want to show off. And I'm like, coming in a leather trench coat. I look like a school murderer, like mass murderer with a big leather trench coat on. Anyway.
You should have been like, oh, I'll come in as John Pertwee with Inverness cape and frills.
I probably would have been murdered in my school if I'd done that. So yeah, and then David's first line, and then Barcelona. And then, this wasn't on the iPlayer version. Was there a credit at the end of the televised version that says...
Introducing...
No, the Doctor will return in The Christmas Invasion.
Yes, it was when it aired.
It's not on the iPlayer version.
I didn't notice that, but now that you say it, I remember that, because I watched the iPlayer version, because, you know... Fuck, can't get in the DVDs anymore.
Have you not got the Blu-ray sets for Series 2?
I do, but the sound's wank.
Is it?
They wank the sound around on those Blu-rays. The music's like over the top and you can't hear the dialogue. They've cocked it right up.
I think it was like that on transmission though. Because do you remember Dead Ringers did like a sketch?
They
where
did do a sketch
they're
where
screaming
it.
Over
Oh,
the...
I don't think it was as bad as that.
Okay.
It was like, I've now...
Is it something that when it came out, people went, the sound is... messed up on the
I think so, yeah, because okay, I did a lot of research and be like, is it my setup? Is it you know, my TV's shit? No, it's just the DVDs are just crap. Or the Blu-rays, sorry, are crap. The DVDs don't have that problem. It's just a Blu-ray thing. But yeah, I mean, I don't get the new series on any form of home media anymore.
I think I've got up to the special. I've got up to series five or the specials on the Blu-ray steelbooks. But
I've got up to series five on the Blu-rays. And then I've got a few. I've got series eight.
I've got series eight on Blu-ray as well.
I've got series seven. Yeah. But I don't have anything after that. I have somehow ended up with... And Jonathan bought me Resolution on DVD on Christmas. I was like...
Well, it's another one to add to the collection.
One insult.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, I remember opening it. It was like, do you not know me, brother?
Unbelievable. I've got... and I think the most recent Doctor Who I've got is Day of the Doctor. I don't think I've got anything after...
Oh, I've got Day of the Doctor as well, yeah. I got the big box set, the big Blu-ray box set.
Series 8 is the most recent thing I've got.
I'm just waiting for them to do big collection sets.
Because then
they'll fix everything and make it nice.
We'll get there.
When they come, which they will, I'm sure, inevitably, maybe not series 1 to 4, because Russell's in charge and, you know, he might not want documentaries made about certain things at the moment. But
we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. Should we wrap up? Is there anything more to cover?
I don't really think so. Yes, one thing that we should say, talking about the credits. This is the last time Doctor Who is credited as Doctor Who.
Doctor Who, yeah. I think, is David not credited as the Doctor?
He credits himself, he's credited. It was him, he was the one who was instrumental in the change. He was like, I think you find that the character's called the Doctor, not Doctor Who. Oh. I want to say, David, come on, you're a fan, you should know. Tom Baker was Doctor Who.
That's kind of like grassing on heritage.
I know. It's like,
grassing on the past.
That's the fun of it. You want to incite people. I always say it. If I was showrunner, there'd be Doctor Who on those credits.
All the time.
And I would even be more of a wanker and put Doctor Dr. Dot Who.
No, that you would get death threats.
I would love it. And I welcome them. I welcome the death threats.
Jesus. Okay. We had to cut something out there. Matt's in tears. Well, I'm not going to tell you what happened. It was awful. So that is Bad Wolf, The Parting of the Ways. As we said at the start, it's the best regeneration story in the new series. So there's Bad Wolf, Parting of the Ways. As we said at the start, the best regeneration story of the new series.
Best finale.
The best finale
of the new series.
What's the next finale after this?
Yeah. No, what's the next top finale?
Of the new series? Probably series 3.
Really?
Yeah, I really like that three-parter.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would say The Doctor Falls.
That's good as well. I've got an aversion to that period, generally. So,
I can understand.
It's just not my... You know, I think we all need to come to terms with the fact that Doctor Who isn't the same for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
As we've made pertinently clear through the story, through this episode of The Review of Death. And I just don't like that version of Doctor Who that much from that period. So this is much more my cup of tea, Doctor Who wise. So I'd say probably series 3 is the next best one in my opinion.
Okay.
But yeah, there we have it. Man, that was a long episode, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But we cracked through an awful lot.
I know, it's 9 o'clock now.
It was great fun. It was really nice to go back and talk about this one.
It was really good fun.
We'll have to find more New Who episodes to go back and discuss. So. Yeah. Any stories in particular that you guys fancy from, let's say, series 1 through to, I'll even say, through to series 6. How about that?
My God!
Pick an episode from that lineage. I'll go through the ones that get mentioned the most. Maybe we'll put a poll on Twitter and then we can figure out which throwback new series episode that we'll be doing next.
Yeah.
In terms of what's coming up next, the next thing you ought to be receiving, hopefully, fingers crossed, will be the Jodie Whittaker poll.
Yeah.
So we'll go through all of the Jodie Whittaker era minus Power of the Doctor, obviously, just because of recency bias and recording schedules and blah, blah, blah. And we'll go through all of what people considered her best episodes, her best moments, the best cast, guest cast, actors, monsters, da 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 da, music. It's going to be good fun. It's going to be similar vein to the Roddies.
Yeah.
But a bit more laid back. We're not going to be suited and booted for that one. Anything for you, Matt?
No.
Grand. See you later.
See ya, goodbye. Ta-ra.